good to see you this morning and welcome. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. And what's a great day to be together and to have some time to talk as we kick off a new series together. Take a look, if you will, at Daniel chapter 1, which is where we're going to be today. And we're starting this series on Daniel. You know, I've been with you 8 years, and I always like to take the opportunity in the summertime because I really want people to understand parts of the Old Testament, at least a good chunks of the Old Testament, because they so much go together. And so in the summers, I'll usually pick a character and just do a character look through the Old Testament. We've done Moses, we've done Abraham, we've done Joseph, we've done Nehemiah, we've done David, and then we did the kings and all the different kings. And so we've looked at several different characters, and after we were in this January, this year, we kicked off a series that was an end times kind of series. And I had such amazing response from all of you. So much of it comes from the book of Daniel. So we decided to do Daniel's life along with some of his end time stuff. And you know, as I was taking a look at Daniel's life, Daniel is an interesting character. There aren't many in the Bible, but Daniel's one of them to which the scriptures have nothing negative to say about him. You know, the one great thing about, and I'm glad that it's all included in the scriptures, whether it be David or Moses, the good and the bad is shared. When they make a mistake, when they mess up, when they sin, whatever, the scriptures record it for us. But about Daniel, we don't really have anything negative. And that doesn't mean he was perfect, but it does mean that God used him in an amazing way. And I want to share it with you. And you're going to see today, okay, and I'm going to get myself in some trouble today because I'm going to make some parallels that I think that may surprise you, that may be things you haven't seen before. We're going to take a look at it this morning. But Daniel, I don't know that there's anyone in the Scriptures, especially in the Old Testament, perhaps other than Moses, that God revealed more to. And definitely as far as future, there's nobody that in the Old Testament that God revealed more to than Daniel. Other than maybe John in the book of Revelation. I mean, I just can't tell you just what he has seen, especially being so ancient, so far back. And you're going to see next week some of the things that God is going to reveal to Daniel and share with him that were happening and going to happen in his time. So Daniel has this whole list. It's an amazing book. He has this whole list of things that God showed him that he revealed. Much of it has already come to pass, okay, up to our time. But there is still a whole lot of it that's ahead of us, and we'll talk about that in weeks to come. Now, in the first 6 chapters of Daniel is about his life and the life of 3 of his friends. And we're going to focus on that for a few weeks here up front. And then toward the latter part of the summer, we'll hit some of the end times because some of it is remarkable. Well, all of it's remarkable. But some of it is amazingly remarkable, all right? In whatever the adjective I can use. It's incredible to take a look at what God showed Daniel and see how it fits today. We'll hit that later at the end of the summer. But when you take a look at Daniel's life, you can title his life a whole lot of different things. But it seems that you can title it, how do you live as a believer in such a dark world? That would be the title I'd give it. Okay, if I gave just a title for this first part. I think I've read some others that choices that make the difference. I think Beth Moore called it a life of integrity. Whatever I've seen, and as I've looked at different people who have looked at these, especially these first 6 chapters, what is it that shows us about Daniel? Well, you're going to find out something about him, and now I think you're going to see the parallel, because I'm here to tell you, it's going to become increasingly harder if you are a believer today. it is going to become increasingly harder for you to live as a believer. It just is. And if you haven't already seen it, you're going to see it. Depends on what occupation and line you are in. And I'm just telling you that this is a look at how do you live in those situations. Maybe different than you think. Okay? So as we take a look, at this passage, you're going to get that into your mind. Now, let me take a look at verse 1 and 2 just by way of introduction, and then let me give you a little bit of a background. I don't have time to do a whole lot. Let me get that out of the way before I trip over it. But I want you to see this picture of, I always like you to see context, where in history that it was. I remember I was this. You're going to find King Nebuchadnezzar here in this first verse. And let's just take a look at it. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, I'll tell you about that in just a minute. King of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Okay, he came to Jerusalem and he besieged it. And when you take a look at it, and it goes on to say in verse 2 that God actually was in this, that the Lord actually gave the king of Judah into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. And then some of the vessels, I believe, of the house of God that Nebuchadnezzar took. Now, I had somebody come up to me one time and say, yeah, I didn't realize this, but Nebuchadnezzar's a real person? I'm like, oh, gosh, are you kidding? Yes. All right. In fact, sometimes that's why I like to do context, historical context, because you wouldn't believe the lies that people hear around them and believe. All this has a historical context, and it fits perfectly in history. But anyway, we'll talk about that another time. So let me kind of put this all together for you. Okay, in around 1000 B.C., that was King David. I mean, give or take. But around 1000, that was King David. And before that, King Saul, and then you can keep on going back to the others. But when you bring it all up, that was the kings. That's what we talked about last summer. And this Jehoiakim that we just talked about, who was the king of Judah at the time, okay, he was one we talked about last summer. Now, let me kind of walk down through it. So they kicked off, and then you had David. Things went really well under David. Then you had Solomon. They went okay. They did good at first, but it didn't end well. And then as Solomon died and new king took over, there was a divided kingdom. And I don't have time to go into all of it, but there was basically a civil war, and there were two nations of Israel. There was the northern part and the southern part. Now, the northern part had 10 of the tribes, and the southern only had three if you count Levi, who were the priestly and all that. So you had these two. Now, the northern part, we talked about this all last summer, and I know all of you remember everything, so we're good. But there was this northern part. They never had a good king. They never turned to the Lord. Their culture just kept diving. And so God allowed them to be conquered. And in I believe it's 722, the Assyrians came through and defeated the northern part. But they did not defeat the southern part. The northern part was called Israel. The southern part was called Judah. And it was those who were from Israel who were Judah is that where it really is called on. Those northern tribes kind of scattered and went everywhere, and we don't really know a whole lot about them. But the southern one didn't. So I want you to hear this. This is interesting. So in 722... down now to 586. So it lasted about 150 years longer. But that was Nebuchadnezzar. That was the Babylonians. And then Nebuchadnezzar came through. And again, it just had gotten to the point to where they'd gotten their eyes so far off who God was that God actually allowed Nebuchadnezzar to come in and come through. Now, so this is the context of that. Judah, that is, they're Israel, but Judah. That's where we get our name Jew from Judah. You go to, in all the different languages, Jude, you know, or Juden, or it's all it's from Judah, okay? Because that was who the ones that survived in the southern part. But this Jehoiakim and some of them, they, you know, they got rebellious, and the Babylonians. Now I'm here to tell you, they at the time, which is modern day Iraq, the Babylonians were the most powerful people at the time. In fact, we're going to talk about this next week. But the Babylonians were really the first. Some people point to the Assyrians, but they didn't hold it long enough to really do enough. But the Babylonians were the first world empire. Nebuchadnezzar is the one who started that ball rolling. And then it went to the Medes and the Persians, the Greeks, and then eventually the Romans. So there are four major world empires, which Daniel had shared before, and we'll talk about that next week. But the Babylonians, this Nebuchadnezzar was a smart guy. Okay, lots of these guys earlier than Nebuchadnezzar, they conquered a lot of territory. But to be honest with you, they were just thugs. Read about them if you want to. But most of these conquerors, you know, in Egypt and some of those, they were just thugs. All they knew how to do was to come in, conquer country, and then try to be as cruel as they were to keep people submissive. But Nebuchadnezzar was smart. It's the reason he was able to do what he did. It was the reason that he's looked back as one basically being brilliant in putting together the first world empire. And it wasn't just about conquering. It was about how do you assimilate people groups into one people group. He knew it was going to take more than just blowing through and seeing how cruel you can be, like these thugs we see on TV. He was going to take more than that. And so he had a plan, and we get to see it. It's right here in Daniel chapter 1, the plan he had for assimilating the people groups that he conquered. And so again, it is what made Nebuchadnezzar. He was... As I read what he did and what he was thinking, he was a smart guy. Now, he had his cruelness, too. It wasn't like he was this benevolent guy. He had his ambition and he had his cruelness and he definitely had his arrogance, which you're going to see in the weeks to come. But this is a whole lot of fun when you take a look at these six chapters. If you want to hear what it means to basically be who God's called you to be in a culture that doesn't even want to hear anything about what you have to say, this is the book to look at. So I think it's timely also. So let's jump right in. Number one, Nebuchadnezzar's plan. Let's see Nebuchadnezzar's plan to assimilate, to get everybody on the same page. Because Nebuchadnezzar was smart enough to know that as he conquered these countries, after he conquered them, is the hardest thing was not conquering a country. The hardest thing was holding on to it after you conquered it. And then as time went by and as people, you know, from the former ruling class or those would gather people up and there would be these uprisings, right? And then you'd have to send the army back in and conquer the uprising. And so Nebuchadnezzar then thought, okay, we're gonna do this one different. And it worked for the most part. Because Nebuchadnezzar is known for having the first world empire. So let's take a look now in chapter 1 and look at verse 3 now. We'd already talked about verse 1 and 2. Let's look at verse 3. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz. Okay, Ashpenaz. Remember Ashpenaz. He's a pretty important character in this. He's the chief eunuch, it said here. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But basically, he is going to be the chief re-educator, indoctrination. He's going to be the guy that's in charge of reprogramming all of these people groups. Hey, let's take a look at it. Continue to read. To bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility. Now, take a look at that. That's important, too. That shows us that Daniel and the three boys had come from either the royal family or some of the other nobility in Israel. So again, part of this, this shows us a little bit of Nebuchadnezzar's plan. His plan was then to get some of the younger ones who were perhaps princes or princesses, or he would get some of the nobility that, that were further down the line, and he would make sure who they were, that they were intelligent, and he'd bring them back to Babylon. It became a plan of his for every country he conquered. That he would bring these people back. He would bring the talented back. He would bring those who are skilled craftsmen back. And there would be this education, re-education, if you will. Let's continue to read. Verse 4, youths without blemish. Those who are good looking, basically, good appearance. Skillful in wisdom. That is, they're intelligent, they're able to think. They're able to understand knowledge and then be able to apply it, which is what wisdom is. Continue to read. Endowed with knowledge, understanding learning. Okay, this is all pretty amazing when you think about this. And competent to stand in the king's palace. So, again, this may not seem like a big deal to you, but this is amazing. He was going to incorporate these into the ruling class of the bigger Babylon. Again, I mean, that seemed like a big deal to you, but back at that time, that was groundbreaking. I mean, basically what you did was, when you went in and conquered a country, you ruled with an iron fist, and you put the ruling people that, you know, that were on your side, and the way you kept the peace was just to be cruel. But he's bringing back people who were from the country, and he's allowing them to rule underneath him after he re-educates them. And what that does is he can send those, think about this, think about the brilliance of this. He can send those who are of nobility, of royal birth, back to their original countries and rule their original countries underneath him, after he's re-educated them. Do you see his plan? It's pretty amazing, because it's hard for a country to rebel against its own nobility and royalty. But Nebuchadnezzar is obviously in charge, completely in charge. So he brings these kids back. Most believe from the translation of the word that these kids were between 13 and 15 years old. So they were young enough they were old enough to be able to be sure that they were smart, intelligent, whatever, but they were young enough not to be so set that they couldn't re-educate them. And so, again, this plan began. Let's continue to read. They were going to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. So there's the education. Basically, this whole thought of basically putting within side of them an ability for them to know who the Babylonians are and what they were supposed to believe. So you had to re-educate them. And then, this is interesting to me, you had to give them a new structure, basically a new structure within side of them, not just education, but also morals and culture. And when you begin to look down this, I want you to think about this for a second. Well, let's read the passage. And then while we're reading the passage, I'll try to decide how much trouble I want to get into today. All right. Take a look at the passage. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. So you get the program. Bring these 13 to 15-year-olds back, good-looking, bright, and we're going to put them in a training process for 3 years. We're going to feed them the best foods, according to us. We're going to re-educate them. We're going to indoctrinate them. We're going to do everything we can. And at the end of 3 years, they're going to stand before Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar obviously was smart enough to where he had some sort of oral examination to find out how they were thinkers and how intelligent they were, how smart they were. And then he'd pick from those, after they'd been educated in all the different things, then he'd pick from those, he'd put them in different places of authority and position. It's a pretty amazing thing that a guy would think this way. Let's continue to read. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And some of you are thinking, well, what about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? You know, I sang that song when I was a kid. All right, here we go. All right. Verse 7, look at this. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar. Hannah he called Shadrach. Mishael, he called Meshach, and Azariah, he called Abednego. Now, think about this. They took them from their country. They put them in Babylon. They re-educated them. They changed their names. They were doing everything that they could do to strip from them their belief system and who they were. For them to go from being Israelites to being Babylonians. This was the effort. And here's what I want to share with you today. And here's what I want to challenge you with today. I want you to think about this. I want you to think about our country. I have to be honest with you. In what I have seen and what I am seeing, we do not live in a country that accepts your beliefs. We just don't. In fact, we have a whole educational system that even the belief in a God is shot down at every point. Now, don't get me wrong. There are people in our church who are in the educational system and who are lights in a dark place. But by and large, especially on the college level, we have an educational system that is anti-God. And if you don't believe that, you've got your head in the sand. And so you send your kid to these places. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong to send your kid to these places because Daniel and them, they were there, right? But I ask you the question today, and you may have to think about this, especially if you have children or you're going to have children one day. What have you done to prepare them to walk into that? Just think about it. When they walk in and Dr. Fluffyhead tells them that there is no God and that over billions of years from a pool of ooze, we all became. By the way, I want you to know there is so much absurdity to that. It takes more faith to believe that. But that's another message for another time. But I ask you the question, have you put enough in them that when they show up like these four boys did, that no matter how hard the Babylonians tried, they couldn't steal the God that was already living in them from them. I think that's amazing. I think this is what this is about. And I ask you the questions and priorities in your own life as parents, if you're parents today. What are the priorities you have for your kids? Oh, well, you know. I want them to be able to play baseball. All right, well, God bless you, play baseball. That's fantastic. But how long? I hope you're hearing me here. Because you are now living in a country that's similar to this, where your children, I have to be careful here. This is where I'm going to get in trouble, and I got in trouble last night. But I need to say this. Don't hear me wrong. There are godly people who are in the educational system that are doing their best. But by and large, I'm here to tell you, a child can't even sing Jesus Loves Me at school without getting into trouble. I mean, come on! And then we think that... So my question is not that our culture's heading that way, guys. And we can keep praying, and I hope we do, and I hope there's a reversal of it. But that's where we're going. We're going to where what you believe is not going to be tolerated. And so the question I have for you is, how do you live in a place like that? And it's even tougher on your kids and what they have to walk into. That when they hold their hand up and say, well... And they give a legitimate response to a ridiculous theory, and they're belittled for it. Oh, that's just ridiculous. That's just so yesterday. That's just primitive. That's just, I've heard all of it. But, well, that's what these kids were. That's where they were. That's what they walked into. Because the prevailing thought were the Babylonians. Why? Because they were in charge. They taught them what was politically correct, what you said and what you didn't say. Interesting. So as I share with you today, what are you doing to prepare that kid to walk into it? Just a thought. If you're a believer here today, and if what you believe is important to you. If it's not, then just keep doing what you're doing, right? But I'm here to tell you, what does your kid see as the most important thing to you? I just want you to hear it. It's just something for you to think about in here. What is it that your child thinks is most important from you to them? In fact, what does your child think right now is the most important thing that you want for them? Is it their math grade? Is it their sports prowess? Is it they're getting this degree, that degree? Or is it who the Lord is? It's interesting, isn't it? Because I'm here to tell you, our country around us is demanding for you to be committed to so many things. I've watched it. I've watched it now for the last 10 years. I mean, I remember this. I mean, I'm just going to just throw it out there. So I'm going to get in trouble, but that's fine. I remember my son was going to play baseball. Third grade. Yeah, let him play baseball. That's fine. Well, we found out that they were going to play games on Sunday morning. Not us. So I'm fine with it. I'm not making a stink. I'm not doing anything. I called the coach. I said, you know, he's not going to be playing. I want you to hear what this coach said to me. We weren't even living over here. We were living somewhere else. All right. This coach said to me, oh, well, Mr. Parrish, I just would hate for Christopher to get behind. He's nine. But what you're saying is you want baseball to be more important than who the Lord is. That's what you're saying to me. No, he's not playing. Okay, could he have been a future major leaguer? Maybe. But I missed out on that for him. I've got higher priorities. Always have. I'm not going to sell them out to things anything less. Just not. Never wanted those things. Man, yeah, I love those things. Anybody screamed louder at the ball games when I went, but that's not the biggest priority. So here's the question again. Just throwing these things at you. These are things that you have to think about. What is the priority? What is it? So that when they're snatched away, how will they respond when they go to Indoctrination 101 at the University of Babylon? Right? How do they respond? They better have something in their heart or they'll respond like everybody else responds. Think about it. Amazing. All right, let's see. All right, here we go. So what did they do? Well, they gave them a new education, they changed their homes, they gave them new authorities, and they gave them new names. I want you to see the subtleness. This is perhaps something you've never seen before. Take a look. Take a look at their names. Okay? Take a look at their names. Daniel. Now, I want you to know, at the time, today it's a little different. People don't really put a big deal into the meaning of names. Some do. I did. But most people, you know, you like a name, whatever the name is, because you like the name. It's pretty, whatever. But back then, names meant something. In fact, that's why you chose them. Now, the word Daniel, in fact, let me just go ahead and tell you this. Whenever a name ends in E-L, the E-L is the Hebrew word for God. So when you have Samuel, right, Samuel, therefore Daniel, anything that ends in E-L usually is a Hebrew name, and E-L means God. Therefore, Daniel, the name means God is judge, or God is the one who judges. Now, what did they rename Daniel? You remember going back? They renamed him Belteshazzar. You know what Belteshazzar means? Worshipper of Baal. Now, who was Baal? Baal was the chief god of the Babylonians. What are they doing? Can you see it? Oh, it's just religious renaming. No. They've got a plan. They got a plan. Worshipper of Baal. Interesting. All right, let's go down through some of these other names. Hananiah. His name means that Jehovah is gracious or filled with grace. The name that he was given was Shadrach. The ACH, or if you will, it's Ak or Aku. It was one of the gods of the Babylonians. It was the moon god. So Shadrach and Meshach, it's the same derivative. Shadrach means command. That is, basically, Aku, the moon god, is in command or is in control of our everyday lives kind of things. Therefore, you go from Jehovah is gracious to Aku is in charge. Interesting. Mishael means he who is God. Therefore, Meshach is a similar derivative. If you take a look at Mishael, all right, see the E-L on it, Michael, all the rest of them, basically means he who is God. The word Meshach is it's the same name, except for as opposed to the L at the end, there's the Ak at the end. Therefore, it goes from he who is God to he who is Aku, or the moon god. So you can see what they're doing. Okay. Last one, Azariah. Just means that the Lord helps, or the Lord comes to the defense of those that trust him, basically is what it means. And then they made his name Abednego. The word Nego is basically Nego, Nebo, or Nebo, however you want to look at it. That was the son of Baal in the mythology of the Babylonians, in the god system. Therefore, basically, it just means the servant of Nebo. Therefore, the servant of the son of Baal. So, they gave them all different names. So you see, again, Nebuchadnezzar is a smart guy. When you take a look at what he's doing, and my bet is it worked. Think about it. And you're in Babylon. You know, you'll never see your home again. You might as well make the best of a new situation. I can imagine that Nebuchadnezzar came into them on the first day. They all came into a room, perhaps maybe like this one. And Nebuchadnezzar says, I want you to know, here's what we're doing. We're going to train all of you to be leaders. Perhaps even back in your country, we don't know. But if you do this training well, hey, you will be treated as a ruler. Therefore, don't blow this great opportunity by holding on to customs that really don't matter. Don't you think that's probably what he told them? Don't blow this opportunity. Interesting. All right, so number one is basically Nebuchadnezzar's plan. I just wanted you to see it because it's going to follow us over the next few weeks. All right, the next won't take us on. Number two is what I'm going to call Daniel's resolve. Daniel's resolve. That is the title of the message. Resolve. What does resolved mean? It means that something that happens in here, that I am rock solid in what I believe. And you can do whatever you want to do, but this is who I am. And you're going to find that this resolve is tested over the next few weeks. Tested much more than just by what you eat. That's where it starts. But it was tested through the weeks as we talk about this. That's why I really believe is, you know, what's in your heart is what's going to guide you. And if you really don't believe it anyway, when the heat's turned up, you'll fall away. It's an amazing story. Anyway, all right? But take a look at this. Here's what Daniel did in chapter 1, verse 8. But Daniel resolved. I do like the translation that the King James says. Purposed in his heart. Purposed in his heart. Resolved. Same thing, but it just gives you the strength. Therefore, what motivated him? Herefore, he was resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Basically, what it's saying here, it has to do with food here, but it goes much further than that. It has to do with the culture, with the morals, with this indoctrination thing. You can teach me all you want to, but there are some things that if God commands me not to do them, I'm not doing them. Okay? But notice that Daniel was not a leader of a rebellion. He first went and asked permission. This is interesting what he did. We have a thing around here at the church called the Daniel Plan. And it's a diet. It's a food diet, which is fine, which is great. But it's based on this. And we've had that in our church. But when you take a look, it's much deeper than that. Let's continue to read. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs, Ashpenaz, or whatever his name is, right, to allow him not to defile himself. So he goes and asks. He's not a leader of a rebellion. He's not one that's saying, I'm not going to do it. You guys come with me and we just won't eat until you give us. No. He went to him. This is the guy in charge, Ashpenaz. He went to him and he just asked, hey, I just don't want to do this. Look at this. Continue reading. And verse 9 is huge. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. I don't know. It seems that the Lord seems to come to the defense of those who are faithful to him. It's just interesting how that works. Just something to throw at you to let you hear. It's just easier, right, not to rock the boat, but he's not really rocking the boat. He went to ask permission and basically said, hey, listen, could you please not let this happen? Well, let's continue to see what this guy said. And the chief of the eunuch said to Daniel, I fear the king who assigned your food and drink. In other words, Ashpenaz says, listen, I'm afraid of the king. He's the one that gave the order. Here's what you're to eat. He wants you to know he's given you his best and the best. Everything Babylon has to offer. Continue to read. For why should he see that you are in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age, so you would endanger my head with the king? So Ashpenaz is in fear that if he lets them eat what they want to, they're not going to be as healthy looking as the other kids that are in the program. Okay? Interesting. So you have this picture, and it ends pretty interesting. It's going to end because this goes on. This same conflict goes on as these kids are trying to live in a culture that is so against what they believe. And there's a constant struggle, a constant thing that hit. We'll talk about that more as we get there. But it's a great book. It's a great look at how believers have found strength down through the ages when what they believed was not accepted or acceptable. It's interesting. Interesting to think about. All right, now, look at number 3, and this is where we'll close. God's provision. Then Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. So there's this picture of not giving us all that garbage food. I mean, while it may be delicacies and while it may be fine, but don't give us all that garbage food. Let us just eat healthy food and see what happens. Just 10 days. I mean, we're here 3 years. What can then 10 days really harm you? So he comes up with an idea for him, and he says, great, okay, I'll let you do it for 10 days. But see, 10 days can help some, but God's going to have to step in here and do something. And again, I've just found, as I've read the scriptures, that God seems to step in when those are faithful to him. That's interesting. Let's continue to see what happens. And so, then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed to you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter, okay, and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance. The word fatter in flesh doesn't mean fatter, like we would look at fatter. What it means is that they were of good tone. They didn't look sickly. When they used to use the term eat the fat of the land, they're not talking about fat. They're talking about that which is good, that which is the best. So that word is an interesting word. All right, continue to read. Verse 16. So the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink and gave them all vegetables, just like these kids asked for. As for the four youths, God gave them learning and skill and all literature and wisdom. In other words, their faithfulness, God, remember, they were smart kids anyway, but God gave them an extra measure of being able to understand. Interesting. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. And at the end of the time when the king had commanded that they be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. The king spoke with them, and among all that were them was none found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they stood before the king. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding which the king inquired about them, he found them 10 times better than all of his other magicians, advisors, basically, is what all those other words mean. Didn't mean he had a guy with a black hat and that he pulled a rabbit out of. The magicians and others, those were the ones who were considered the seers. They were really the most educated people of their time is who they were. We'll talk about that in weeks to come. But here's the picture. Is that even among a pagan culture, God used these boys. And if you're in here today, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, that's the age these kids were. And that, I'm here to tell you, what God taught them when they were young was going to have huge impact in their life later down the road. It may be tough when you're young, but down the road, I'm here to tell you, he'll use you, especially those who are faithful to him. Pretty amazing story. We're going to have to end it there. There's so much as we're going to look in the days to come, but this was just kind of a setup day. But remember this thought and this great question, resolve. And if you're a believer here today, are you resolved to be who he's called you to be? No matter what pressure this culture puts on you to conform. Because if you're living in this world, which most of you are, some of you are still listening. It just makes my heart good. All right? All right? You know the pressure that's put on you to conform. Even now. And the more you're in this world, the more pressure there's going to be put. It's an incredible thing. But be it resolved, not to be a jerk, okay? Not to lead a revolt, but just to be who he's called you to be. Interesting. All right, God bless you. Let's all stand. We'll have a closing word of prayer. Tim, come out and close us. So then next week we're going to have kind of one of Daniel's future vision type things that is amazing. We'll talk about that next week. All right, but God bless you guys. Have a great Memorial Day. Hey, if you can make it to the Memorial Day service tomorrow at 10, it's a pretty neat time. All right, God bless you guys. Have a great day. All right, Tim.